local talk about local issues. It's the Gary Bouton Show on the AJR News Network.
And we're flying through this week before Christmas. It's a wild, wonderful Wednesday, and welcome along. Spike Nesmith is with us in studio, Mike King on phones, Brittany Murray handling our news duties on National Hard Candy Day. Spike, and after reading the paper today, I'm not so sure we want to promote that. The local paper, Clarksburg paper today, had some stats on diabetes and obesity in West Virginia. So promoting candy that is essentially 100% sugar might not be the best idea. So we move on to number two. It's National Oatmeal Muffin Day. Probably a little bit better. No, you're sticking with Pop-Tarts, huh? Spike, come on. On our show today, we're going to talk to Amy Summers, House of Delegates from Taylor County, 49th District, actually Taylor County, and a little bit of Marion and Monongalia. She is the new Republican Majority Leader. We'll join her in just a second. Mike Romano's coming in. Then we're going to talk to Mike about medical marijuana and where the heck we are with the medical marijuana legislation that was passed back in 2017. And I think sale of medical marijuana was to begin in July of 2019, so about 6 months away, and it's not looking like that's going to happen. So he'll join us. And then Dave Perry, the president of the West Virginia Board of Education, is going to join us. His board has come up with a six-point program or plan that they'd like to present to the legislature, which would improve, according to them, the school aid formula. However, it's going to require additional funding from the legislature, and that's always a big question mark. First up this morning, though, Amy Summers, who's a registered nurse, and I think would suggest that our option on National Oatmeal Muffin Day would be a better one. Amy, you agree?
Good morning, Gary.
Good morning.
I'm eating oatmeal as we speak.
There you go. Good, good for you.
But craving hardtack cinnamon candy.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to have a little of it, but we thought we'd present the better of the two options this morning. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, great opportunity for you. You're not only the new House Majority Leader, you're the first female Republican House Majority Leader. And, you know, I don't know if you were aspiring to be that, but it always is nice to be recognized in that fashion, to be the first.
Yes, and the Democrats can't recall a female in their party that served in this role either, so we're thinking I'm the first woman ever to serve majority leader.
Okay, and I think I did read that. It didn't seem to be definite, but I did read that as well. So you also provide North Central West Virginia now with some legislative leadership that we haven't had in a little bit. That doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt. It gives us a voice for people in state government to know the issues that we have in our area.
Uh-huh. Roger Hanshaw, who's the relatively new Speaker of the House, he's from Clay County. He's the captain of this Republican caucus now. Can you explain what your role will now be within the caucus?
The role of the majority leader as you watch the session is usually they're kind of the ringleader of the session as things proceed forward, but you also have a lot of behind-the-scene activities and duties that you carry out to make the session move as flawless as you can.
Uh-huh.
So coordinating with the Senate, dealing with the media, handling the House staff, there's a lot of different things that go on behind the scenes.
And I'm trying to remember my high school civics. Amy, is the majority leader the third ranking or the second ranking? I know there's a pro tem in there somewhere.
Right. Speaker pro tem is the second ranking,
okay.
And House majority leader is the third ranking.
Okay, there we go. Now, you've only been in the House since 2014. That's when you were first elected. So, and you've essentially jumped aboard politics at a time when the Republicans are sailing in fairly successful waters. It's afforded a great opportunity to you.
It has, and I'm really excited about it. And my father's the one that kind of got me interested in politics. He was always involved, and I know he is smiling down from heaven right now.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Well, you know what? And I think it's certainly an honor to have stepped up to this position in such a short time. I mean, typically, delegates, you know, run three, four, five times have served 10, 11, 12 years in the House or Senate, whatever the case might be, before they rise to leadership roles like this. So again, that's a big pat on the back.
It's a great honor, and I'm thrilled that Speaker Hanshaw feels that I can carry out these duties well.
Is the fact that you will now go into the 2019 legislative session knowing some big issues that came up last year and kind of stalled a few other things. You know that you're going to be looking at teacher pay increases again. You know that there's some PEIA issues that need to be handled. But will it, knowing that you've got that and there's some work been done on that, some decisions perhaps already made, is it going to enable the legislature to put some items stalled last year back on the table?
We always reevaluate the bills that were in the previous sessions to get them. If we thought they were good bills then, we'll reevaluate them and get them back on board for this year. Yes, that's always part of the process.
Yeah, we do hear pretty frequently about the attempt to eliminate the business inventory tax, which most certainly will be brought up again. Is there a way to do that without strangling our county school systems?
We have to find a way to do that. It's a really tough issue, so people haven't wanted to take that on in the past. But when you hear people talk about the coal industry that we had here and how, you know, we made metallurgical steel, we had steel in Weirton, and we heated our homes and we powered our country with that. But, you know, they had a lot of concerns that we were shipping our product out. Well, they're having the same concern with natural gas. Mm-hmm. But in order to keep that product, we have enough to ship out and keep here. But in order to create some downstream activity like manufacturing of plastics, which is a byproduct of natural gas, then we need to be able to remove some more barriers that those companies, why they don't choose here. And that tax is one of them.
Yeah. The Republicans, I believe, caucused recently, maybe the weekend before last. Does that sound right?
Yes, we did. We caucused and we listened to what all of our members had to say. What were the issues that their constituents brought to them that are impacting their lives?
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, so we're talking about what policies can we put forward to improve those concerns that the constituents had.
Right. What I read was that it was specifically or certainly for the most part to learn about issues from constituents back in home districts. And frankly, sometimes the folks back in the home districts, and this is not an indictment of the legislature because it's probably more of an issue at the national level, but it's good for those constituents to know that you're doing this because a lot of times constituents feel that their political representation at the state level and at the national level totally forget about that once they get to Charleston or Washington, D.C.
And you know, that's one reason why we're really putting forward the single-member districts for 2020, because mm-hmm. I can see a big difference for me being responsible for 18,000 people in the House versus the multi-member districts where they're responsible for a lot more people, and the people aren't always sure who to call. They'll call one, they maybe won't get a response, they'll call another. In my district, they call me, mm-hmm. and if I don't call them back, I'm the one responsible, I'm accountable to those people, and it falls on me. So we think that gives greater accountability to the lawmakers, and it gives the constituents a better voice.
We're talking with Amy Summers, who's a member of the House of Delegates, 49th District, which is most of Taylor County.
All of Taylor County, but one district they pulled out to stick with Harrison.
That's part of Harrison.
You can decide why that was done. I don't know.
That's why I hesitated there. I thought there was a little piece of it that was in District 48. And then a little bit of Marion and Monongahela County, and that's a subject for another day as well. But the reason we invited Amy is because she's the newly elected a majority leader in the House of Delegates. When you did the recent caucus and listened to delegates speak of issues from the home front, are there Any items that were a common thread?
There were a couple big items, and mm-hmm. one is still broadband development.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that, even in Taylor County.
Yes, and it's really, it steps right up to the forefront when Speaker Hanshaw and I try to speak by phone, and we can't. You know, he lives in,
he's in a
very
rural
play district.
He's in the heart of it.
And I'm in Taylor, and our calls drop, and our calls drop, and people can't get on the internet. And so we have done two significant bills over the last 2 years, and we're going to have another bill this year, Broadband 3.0, where we continue to work to make it so that companies want to come and install broadband in our areas. That is a big thing that people need. We've also got a foster care crisis going on with a lot of children needing foster care. Mm-hmm. How can we make that easier but still safe? There's a lot of issues there that have to be dealt with, and a lot of those children are a result of the opioid crisis that we've had.
Amy, we mentioned at the top that you're a nurse. You were vice chair of the Health and Human Resources Committee. Is it going to be tough to separate yourself some of that responsibility you had related to health issues in the state? I mean, you're not going to be totally walking away from it, obviously.
I am going to stay on the health committee just because I am so passionate about that.
All right.
So I'll be a member of the committee, and Jordan Hill, who is my replacement, is going to be fantastic. So I'm not worried about any issues there. It'll still be led by Dr. Ellington. And we've worked hard over the interim period to craft bills for the next session. So I feel like things are in good hands there. But I do really... That is my passion, and so I am going to stay serving as a committee member.
With this passion for health-related issues, let's jump to a recent national decision, this Texas judge ruling on the Affordable Care Act, essentially being unconstitutional. How do you see that affecting people, not just in your district, but statewide?
In West Virginia, we're doing really well. Most of our people are insured under the expansion of the Medicaid, PEIA, and then the private insurers coming in. We've got CHIPs for our children. Most people in West Virginia are insured. I cannot remember the exact number to give you a quote, but it's a high number.
Mm-hmm.
So how that impacts us, we'll just have to see how that plays out.
I think you stated when you were asked to comment after your appointment as House Majority Leader that you believe you have folks on the Democratic side of the aisle that you can work with in this day and age. That's encouraging to hear, again, at either the state or the national level.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. These people, Democrats and Republicans, were elected by members in their district who have faith in them. They're going to do a good job, and there's no reason that we can't work together. You just have to find issues that you both agree on and can compromise to make decisions that are going to help everybody. And I'm willing to talk to them. I'm willing to listen. Tim Miley and I are, associates. We know each other. We can speak together freely. So I don't see any issues there.
I can see the two of you getting along okay.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah. That being said, this spirit of camaraderie, what do you think might be the most contentious issue you see in 2019? Or don't you want to go there?
Well, I don't know yet. But okay. We'll have to see. There's always something that becomes a big issue. But the main thing to remember is most of our bills are voted on in a bipartisan manner.
Right.
You only end up with a dozen at the most bills that are contentious.
Yeah.
Out of hundreds.
Yeah. Well, we have to wrap up. Certainly want to acknowledge again I'm acknowledging it the first time that in this election as House Majority Leader, you have received high praise, not only from the leadership, but many of your colleagues. So that should be some comfort heading into your new role.
Well, thank you, Gary, and Merry Christmas.
Same to you. We're delighted to have you. Hope we can talk again once the session starts.
Okay. Bye-bye. Right.
Amy Summers, House of Delegates, Taylor County, little piece of Marion and Monongalia. She is the new Republican House Majority Leader. We believe the first female ever to be a majority leader in our legislature. Okay, we got to take a break. When we return, we're going to stick with a little bit of politics here. Mike Romano, Senator from the 12th District, Harrison County, and several counties south of Harrison County. I won't rattle them all off. We're going to talk a little bit about the medical cannabis law, which was passed in 2017. We'll do that right after this.
You're listening to The Gary Bowden Show on the AJR News Network.
And we're delighted to have in our studio Mike Romano, who's a state senator from the 12th District. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. I like that word, delighted. I don't get that very often.
I figured you didn't. Nice red sweater. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
To you. Thanks for coming in. Also, always nicer to do it in person. Yeah. I grabbed this topic of medical cannabis because you commented on it in a paper article over the weekend. And frankly, I think I told you on the phone that I've had a lot of questions and wasn't really sure where to go to talk about it because I've wondered what's going on. And it would appear very little, but can you, I mean, let's start out just by offering your assessment of where we are with this. It was passed the 17th session, right?
Right. And you know, there's a lot of confusion over medical marijuana, medical cannabis, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, it's going to be a prescription. Just like, you know, hydrocodone or penicillin or anything else, you're going to have a doctor's prescription. But it helps so many people, Gary, and that's the key. Right now, it's a Schedule I narcotic, right up there with heroin and ecstasy and all the bad drugs, right. You know. And even though oxycodone and fentanyl and propofol, which killed Michael Jackson, right. Is a Schedule II narcotic. Right. And it can help so many people. The evidence that we got down the legislature was it helps, you know, people with seizures, PTSD patients get amazing help from it. Cancer patients, it helps them tremendously to actually inhale the smoke and it helps them with eating. And even some rare child diseases, some neurological diseases where children have no hope. It brings their brain back to life, and it just should be available for that kind of use. So in 217, you have a question. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, those are all the benefits that yes. were suggested and right. promoted when it was passed in 2017. Why are we still stuck? I mean, the only thing I had heard was banking issues. Are there other issues that have held this up?
There's ideological issues.
Okay, we're 6 months away from when it was supposed
to
start.
Well, you're right. In 2017, I can still remember Senator Richard Ojeda came to me and he said, let's try to pass medical marijuana. Everybody said it couldn't happen. And Senator Mike Woeful helped write the bill, and you know we were co-sponsors on the bill, and we got the bill and got a lot of bipartisan support. Got it through the Senate. They tried to the Republican leadership in the House tried to kill it, and one of their delegate Falk kind of led a little revolt, and we had planned it, and they overruled the Speaker, and we passed it, and amazingly the governor signed it. It had some things that needed to be done to it, kind of like the ACA, you know it needed some things fixed.
Sure.
I introduced a bill last year, had bipartisan support on it, many, many sponsors. I was promised that if...
This was to make repairs to this medical marijuana.
Yeah, the two main repairs that need to be made is we need to have some kind of bank for folks to put their money in because federal banks will not allow the money in it because they're afraid, you know, somebody from the feds, U.S. Attorney's Office will prosecute them. And two, we needed to get some money to the commission so that they could function and do the things they needed to do. Now, in addition, I put smokables back in for cancer patients. I increased the number of processors and retail distributors because you should have one in every county if it can make it.
Right. With the evidence we've seen nationwide with marijuana, there's going to be a greater demand than what we've provided for in the bill.
People shouldn't have to cross county lines to get their prescriptions, is my argument. Yeah. I mean, you know, if drugstores would sell it, great. We've already got the places. But if they don't, they ought to be able to put a retail location in their county. I was told by the leadership in the House that if we let them pass a bill first and it came over, we could do a strike and insert, which means we take theirs out, put ours in, and they would pass it. That occurred after much negotiation. They took back out smokables. They took out the extra growers and processors, and that's for the West Virginians. We don't want this to be a pharmaceutical thing. We want some West Virginians to be able to make some money off of it. And they're beating down my door from out of state.
You mentioned that. That was interesting.
So there's money to be made off, you know, off come fly and we'll show us this and that. I said, I don't need to see anything.
Yeah.
I said, I know what we need to do. And so we compromised on all that, voted it out. I think we had 6 negative votes in the Senate, sent it over to the House. And the leadership over there just wouldn't accept the bill. And so there was no vote. They tried to do a vote to overrule the Speaker again. It was out of order because they hadn't accepted the bill. It's a technical thing. If you don't accept the bill's not within your ability to do anything on it, and it died. Now all this is at risk because we're not going to meet that deadline.
Are there some of the legislators intentionally walking back on this?
No, the leadership over there, and some folks, have differing opinions, and we're allowed to have that, but the majority wants to have it. In fact, the Senate, right after that happened, two-thirds of us, which has to take Democrats and Republicans, signed a petition for the governor to call a special session on it. They couldn't get to two-thirds in the House. It was necessary to do that because it needs to be done. People need to be helped. You wouldn't withhold hydrocodone from people, even though there's side effects and it can hurt people if it's misused. But we give that because pain medication is necessary. This is a necessary drug to be able to give to physicians.
All right.
With what's going on around the country, you hear today, New York is going to legalize recreational marijuana. Colorado's done it. Five other states have done it. Half of our jail bills is caused by marijuana crimes.
We got to check news headlines.
We're coming back,
Mike. Right. We'll pick up right there.
And now, back to the Gary Boughton Show on the AJR News Network.
We've got State Senator Mike Romano in the studio with us this morning. We're talking about medical marijuana, which was supposed to become available by prescription, as Mike pointed out, on July 1st of 2019. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. Go back to I was trying to watch the clock because you were running us close. What were you talking about? What's happening in New York?
Well,
they're going to pass recreational
marijuana. 29 states have medical marijuana right now. 5 have passed recreational marijuana, including Washington, D.C. In Washington, D.C., they just gave live plants to any citizen that wanted them so that there wouldn't be any, black market or any necessity for retailers and no pharmaceutical companies involved. There's different models. Colorado's had a very good result. Opioid use is down, I think, over 20%. Violent crime's down 15%. There's been they parade the horribles. Like, we had a guy came in and said all childhood poisonings went up 256% since we've legalized it, which was true. It went from 5 childhood poisonings for marijuana prior to legalization, went to 18 out of 50,000 afterwards, and that was a 250% increase, but you can manipulate the numbers. My legislative contacts out there, as well as some friends I have out there, say that, Colorado is just thriving because young people are there. It's progressive. There's all kinds of people going to work. There's nobody laying around on the streets. You hear these horribles paraded. It's something we ought to consider. When I was in the county commission in Harrison County, our regional drug bill was between $2 million and $2.4 million a year. Almost between 25 and 50% of that, depending on the year, was petty marijuana crimes. Because if you get arrested for, even a minimal amount, it comes with a potential year in prison, so they have to take you to jail. We have to pay for that. So think what we could do with that money for 55 counties, because every county's paying that kind of money.
Let's talk about law enforcement. We mentioned that there are still federal laws that prohibit the use and sale and whatever else of marijuana. The U.S. attorney in West Virginia for the Southern District, Michael Stewart, is that right?
Yes.
Said he's going to aggressively enforce the federal laws. What does that do to what we're trying to bring to West Virginia?
Well, first of all, I think Mr. Stewart, and I think he's a nice guy. I think he's trying to do the best he can.
You're an attorney,
Yeah, I mean, this is a state's right issue. They love to say it's a national issue when they want to control it. They love to say it's a state right issue when they want the states to control it.
Yeah.
That's simply what's going on here. Jeff Sessions said that he was going to do something about it. They've not done anything to any other state. I can't imagine that they pick on poor little West Virginia with 29 other states that have medical and now 6 other states.
And recreational.
And by the way, Canada, the entire country, has now legalized recreational marijuana. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to West Virginia is what's happened to us previously. We're going to wait around for all the other states to do what is a good thing. Because when you take marijuana out of the illegal system, and it quits being a gateway drug. The reason marijuana is a gateway drug is because marijuana is pretty harmless. I mean, the record's pretty clear. And if you're a young person, and you say, I'm going to try a little bit of marijuana, which you wouldn't be able to do if it was legalized because it would be like in a liquor store and you'd have to be overage, you go down to a drug dealer because it's illegal. And that drug dealer's selling a Schedule I drug, which is the same as heroin. Okay. Well, you know what? He makes more money off heroin. So you know what he's going to do? He's going to sell you the
step
marijuana.
You up.
But he's going to give you the heroin because he wants to hook you on that. Yeah. That's what's happening to our kids. This would have a positive result. And the way you stop drugs is the same way we stop the black market on alcohol. You've got to figure out a way to take it out of the hands of criminals and quit making criminals rich with it. We've destabilized a democracy south of our border, Mexico. The drug lords are stronger than the government. We are absolutely spinning ourselves into the ground. In West Virginia, we're going to have to build another prison. The feds may make us build another prison because there's so much overcrowding. You're talking about $1 billion. Now, do you not think that money could be spent for rehabilitation of folks that have opioid addictions and do better things with it than house prisoners?
Did West Virginia count on much revenue from this? We were supposed to start. You don't think it's going to happen July 1st of 2019. Are we not going to recognize revenues that perhaps people were thinking about having in the budget in 2019?
Yeah, absolutely. There will be no revenues if the regulations aren't in place and the retailers, processors, and growers cannot get up and running. I mean, there's no doubt. To be quite frank, the revenues off medical marijuana were not going to be near what they would be off recreational marijuana. I've heard estimates from our tax department between $60 and $100 million a year on recreational marijuana. It's going to be far, far lower on medical marijuana because just going to be fewer people that are going to be able to qualify and should get it if that's how we do it. And it's not a step. I've heard again and again, you know, you legalize medical marijuana, recreational marijuana is next.
There's still legislators pushing for it in our West Virginia legislature.
Sure, and there's a lot of them pushing back against it.
Okay.
I don't think that you still have to have a majority to vote in recreational marijuana after you do medical marijuana, even if we're able to get medical marijuana up and running.
So we're not close to that.
No, not by my count.
What you said, yeah.
And again, it's misplaced. I think there's a generational issue. And older folks are the ones who benefit from it a lot. It really amazes me that they're so adamant against it. But my mother equated, and I use my mom a lot because she was such an intelligent woman, great woman, is she equated marijuana for a long time with heroin. She thought they were taught that it was the same thing, and that's the mindset. And she overcame it, and I think a lot of other folks would overcome it if they would just give it a chance. Colorado's certainly having a great result. You don't hear anything bad happening in Washington State or in Washington, D.C. I mean, it's just not... It's a good thing. It's not a bad thing.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how quickly they can move to put it into effect now that we're kind of lagging behind the outline and the game plan that was originally established.
Well, I would just
and
like...
And we've got to go. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I would just like to have had medical marijuana up and running. My bill's going to go back in this year. I heard the Republican leadership is going to have their own bill. If that happens, they'll push that right through. I hope it has all the good things in it that we need to help all the people. And if it doesn't, we'll try to change it. But I also try to get my bill through. But if they make it effective on passage, there is a possibility that we could come pretty close to that July 1 date.
Mike Romano, Senator Mike Romano,
yes.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Always
glad to be here.
Appreciate it. Good to talk about that and get some clarity on where we are with this. Okay, got to take a break. When we return, we're going to talk to Dave Perry, president of the West Virginia Board of Education. He's got some ideas for what the legislature can talk about when they start up in January. We'll be back.
Your daily dose of sanity. The Gary Bowden Show on the AJR News Network.
Dave Perry is president of the West Virginia Board of Education. They've been working on a game plan to take some issues to our legislative session in 2019. Good morning and welcome, Mr. Perry.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
I'm great. Good to have you along. Merry Christmas. And we'll get down to business because we've all, well, a lot of us anyway, most of us have read about blue ribbon commissions on higher ed, task forces, and subcommittees studying PEIA. Your group, the Board of Education, on their own has decided to come up with ideas that you think will help our K through 12 students. What are some of the things that you're going to propose?
You're correct, Gary. The group has proposed six areas of concern for funding. One is to increase the compensation for teacher and service personnel. Two is to increase the ratio of the number of teachers and service personnel to students. The second is to provide adequate funding for school facilities. That's maintenance costs and so forth. That seems to be $51 million shy. And three is to reestablish the incentives for employees to reduce the need for substitutes and improve retention and recruitment. That would be restored to allow them to use the sick leave days to add towards retirement. Then fourthly, the teacher supply hasn't been increased for a number of years, $200 per professional educator.
Yeah, I agree on that. I mean, that seemed like one that could be simply addressed.
Right.
Come on, folks, $200. These teachers aren't making enough money that they only get $200 to take care of their classrooms.
Out of their pockets,
yeah,
exactly.
Right,
and that
right.
would cost $2 million per 100,
yeah.
Which is very minimal in comparison to the state budget. Then the fifth would be increased funding for student physical and mental health needs and increased funding for alternative education.
Now, these were all presented to the board and essentially with the intent of taking them to the legislature as a whole or individually. How do you start that process of making the legislators aware of some of these issues you want to have addressed?
We would hope to have a sit down with the legislative leadership and go over all of them at one time.
Okay.
And again, of course, we wouldn't expect total funding, but we would at least expect attention to some or all of them in some way to change the funding for public education in the state of West Virginia.
Well, and I think you all, meaning the Board of Education, you as president, have agreed that they don't necessarily have to take all of these up in year one either. These are things we would like to have addressed, but if it's spread over 2 or 3 years, you're okay with that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When are these proposals or guiding principles, as I think you identified them or qualified them, going to be presented? You want to meet with the legislative leadership. How quickly will that happen, or has it already begun?
We hope to have that meeting the 1st of January.
Okay, right before the session starts.
We have to sit down with them.
Yeah.
As I said, we found the formula is very equitable, but it's very grossly underfunded.
We're talking with Dave Perry, who's the president of the West Virginia Board of Education. Dave, Republican-led legislatures would tend to be looking at cutting monies. Do you think there's an appetite for some of the changes you're suggesting, which are going to require more funds?
Whether it be partisan or nonpartisan, I think everyone recognizes and accepts the need for funding for public education for the students of West Virginia. So I don't consider this to be a partisan or nonpartisan issue.
It's just kind of finding their sweet spot as to how it can be addressed. The changes, well, I think you suggest something's got to be done because the school aid formula, am I right, has not been changed in at least a decade? And that's
correct,
too long
correct.
To do nothing, I think is the way you put it.
Correct. And it's predicated on student enrollment. And we know student enrollment is decreasing across the state of West Virginia. But with decreased enrollment, we have an increase in necessity for curriculum and program offerings, which means we need additional staff to maintain those rather than to reduce those numbers.
Yeah, we didn't get into the detail, and I think we should. A critical piece of this revised school aid plan is certainly a sign of our times, and that being the drug epidemic. You're going to suggest more money for additional mental health counselors in our schools, psychologists, nurses, et cetera. Is essentially attention to a lot of issues that probably weren't critical back in your early teaching days.
You're exactly correct.
Yeah.
Those are issues as a result of the opioid crisis and the drug babies that are now entering our schools. Yeah. We also, in that area, would ask that the legislature reduce the percent of time used for administrative tasks for counselors by 25%. To allow them to interact with students more
okay.
often.
All right. A pitch, too, is for more money for technical education. And I'm guessing, then, that would be to prepare students for jobs students who might not need higher education degrees or be equipped to tackle a higher education degree, and we now know that there are technical jobs out there that might not require it.
You are correct, Gary.
Okay.
We know that 80% of our workforce in the future will need technical degrees and skills, such as plumbing, electrical, and computer-related technology.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Yes, you are correct.
And I want to back up, I'm sorry, to this mental health issue. Do most, half, how many of our counties now have some full-time paid counselors of the type we're talking about in our schools? I know Harrison County has some. I don't know if they have folks in every school.
I would say that the majority of counties have counselors, but the majority of counselors aren't trained to handle the opioid crisis and the drug babies. Yeah. So we would want a special classification there with the training to address those issues.
Yeah. The legislature, I think we said you'd be happy if they look at some of these 6 points in your plan separately. They don't have to jump on all of them at the same. It's not necessarily a package deal.
No, it's not.
Okay.
Not take all or none. We would be happy if they would address one or two of them this year, one or two next year, or a minimal funding for each of them.
Yeah.
But at least it would be an acknowledgement that we have a problem, that we're willing to work on the problem in the interest of students in the state of West Virginia.
Again, we're talking to Dave Perry, who's the president of the State Board of Education. Are some of the points that came up in your proposal things that you've been working on over the last 10 years to try to get the legislature to make changes and nothing's happened?
No, I think this is the first time this has been looked at in a 10-year period.
Oh, okay.
And it was a study of 6 months. The committee was formed in July, so this is a culmination of that study. And originally, there were 30 points that the committee had come up with, so they were able to reduce that to 6. But this is the first time this discussion has occurred, Gary.
Yeah. And again, I wanted to make the point that this was not a group or a committee that formed and looked at these issues after direction from our governor. This was kind of your baby. Is that correct?
Yes. As the new president of the Board of Education, this is something I had undertaken and appointed Tom Campbell, vice chair, who has served in the legislature and was vice chair of education and chair of pensions at one time.
Yeah. Things like this require some selling. You've got to pitch it to the legislature. Will you be doing that yourself? Does the Board of Education have paid lobbyists that will take some of this to the legislators in our state?
Board of Education doesn't have paid lobbyists. Okay. Myself and Mr. Campbell will be pitching this to the legislature.
Okay. And of course, the opportunity to talk on programs like this, start making them aware of what you're going to be trying to do, I suppose, right?
Absolutely. We appreciate it much. And I think at the same time, if the public realizes and recognizes and accepts, they will come on board. So I think it's very essential to the future of education.
Well, that's and that's a good point, because that's who senators and delegates listen to, is those folks on the home front. When they start saying, hey, we've got to make changes in these areas, that kind of perks their ears up.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Dave Perry, president, West Virginia Board of Education. Look forward to seeing what happens here. We're only, 2-3 weeks away now from the start of the legislation. We'll see what goes on.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us this morning. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks, Gary. Have a good day.
Sure. We've got to take a break. When we return, Hoppy Kirchhoff will join us. We'll find out what's coming up next on Metro News Talkline.
Weekdays from 9, it's the Gary Bowden Show on the AJR News Network.
And we welcome Hoppy Kirchhoff to the program. Hoppy, I wanted to ask you about your commentary about earmarks possibly returning. But before we do that, the lead story has to do with our on WVMetroNews.com, the nursing facility, veterans nursing facility.
Yeah, the VA
here
facility.
Boy, we've heard this before, haven't we? Like little financial issues. It's not the first time it's been a lead story.
No, it is not. And this is something that the Justice Administration got onto. And they have, after a deeper dive, have found out that the nursing facility in Clarksburg fell $5 million behind on its bills. And it's been a couple of months working on this, and this morning we're going to talk to Dave Hardy, who's the Revenue Secretary for the state of West Virginia, and find out how exactly that happens, why it happened. Was that just bad budgeting? Did they not have enough money? Were they overpaying some contractors? What happened here?
Yeah.
So we'll try to get an answer to that coming up this morning on Talkline. Also coming up on Talkline, Patricia Rucker, Republican Senator from Jefferson County. She is the new Senate Education Committee Chairman. It's a rather controversial appointment because some of her views are Some of her views are controversial. Her views on vaccinations, on school vouchers, and those kinds of things. So we'll talk to her about that this morning. Also coming up this morning, we'll talk with Brad McElhinney because our FOIA request for that video of the state troopers in the Eastern Panhandle who allegedly roughed up a teen suspect. Those have been denied. We'll get the latest from Brad on that.
So ACLU was denied on that same information, right?
They were denied as well. So we're all getting the no on the video.
Because that's been, I thought by now it might have been released.
Well, we thought so too. So we're still after it.
All right. Thanks, Hoppy.
Thank you, Gary.
Take care. Okay. We're about out of time. Tomorrow, sticking in our legislative theme, Danny Hamrick from Harrison County House of Delegates is going to join us. He was appointed chair of the House Education Committee, which is a big responsibility for him. It's a post he really, really wants and is passionate about. We're going to talk to him. Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back tomorrow.